Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I am an editor here at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
Does not compute.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
Not everything computes.
No, not everything. But the lady we'll be talking about in this podcast sure did.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, let's talk about her. This comes courtesy of a little listener mail. And this listener mail is actually a twofer. We got two requests in the space of a week, which is not a big surprise considering the subject of this this podcast.
It's a listener mail rock block.
Yeah, so this comes from Bridget and Adam. So I'll read Bridget's first. Bridget is from Australia, but I'm not going to try and do an Australian accent because whenever I do, I sound like a New Zealander who suffered massive head trauma. So here is Bridget's email. Good day, Chris and Jonathan. I've been spending some time lately looking to inspirational people in hope of finding a suitable name for my soon-to-be-born child. Such searching brought me to Ada Lovelace, otherwise known as the mother of coding. I have done a little research into Ada and found that there is some discussion as to whether she deserves this moniker. Was Ada Lovelace the first computer programmer and therefore a worthy namesake for my future daughter? Let me know what you think. Cheers, Bridget. And Adams was, I recently learned a little about Ada Lovelace, the first woman to write an algorithm that would be read by a computer, and thought it would make a great podcast. I love the show. Keep up the amazing work. Can you also do a show on the LHC, please? Cheers. Insert beer clink sound here. All right, Bridget and Adam, this is our podcast about Ada, not about the LHC.
Jonathan, we can't do this podcast.
What do you mean we can't do this podcast?
Well, it's already been done. I mean, Stuff You Missed in History Class. It's already done a whole podcast.
There's a podcast called Stuff You Missed in History Class?
There is. It's wonderful.
Is that the one with Katie and Sarah?
It is indeed. And they talked about Ada Lovelace already.
They did. And they did really well. You know what we should do?
What's that?
We should just have their podcast play.
Okay.
And then we'll sign off.
All right, we'll just insert their podcast here and then
No, we can't do that. Besides, they specifically mentioned us in that podcast.
Well, maybe what we should do then is talk specifically about her computer programming expertise and how she managed to do that considering she lived in the 1800s.
Yeah, you would think she lived before computers. How could she have written a computer programmer? Uh-huh. Program, rather, not programmer.
She wrote a programmer.
Yeah, man, it's been a long week. Well, we're
going to do this on Friday afternoon.
No, clearly not. But we're going to tell you how she wrote a computer program.
Okay.
And, first of all, Bridget, I'm going to get this out of the way. First of all, congratulations on your child.
Oh, absolutely.
And also, Ada is more than worthy, I would say. In fact, I kind of fell in love with this lady the more I read about her.
Yeah, actually, her first name wasn't Ada.
No, it was Augusta.
Augusta Ada Byron.
Yeah, Augusta Ada Byron, daughter of Lord Byron, the poet.
Yes, she was born December 10th, 1815, the daughter of Lord George Gordon Byron and Annabella Milbank Byron. Actually, her parents married on the 2nd of January in 1815, but were separated by January 16th, 1816.
Yeah, so the marriage lasted a full year and a week and a half.
Yeah, just long enough to have the first computer programmer born to them.
Right. So, yes, their marriage was not a happy one, her parents. In fact, young Ada was never to meet her father.
No.
Was separated. She lived with her mom, and her mom had decided that Ada did not really need to have the distractions of poetry. She thought that Byron's rather unpredictable personality, let's call it that, shall we, was due to his romanticism and his obsession with poetry. Yeah, let's just, and Annabella, the mother, felt that that such qualities were not really admirable. She didn't want her daughter to have the same sort of personality and wanton lifestyle as the father had. So she thought, well, what's the least poetic thing I can push my daughter into? I happen to be an amateur mathematician. Let's push her into mathematics.
Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, I found out that Lord Byron had referred to his brief married wife. He called Annabella the Princess of Parallelograms.
Yes, that was
not poetic.
It was not meant to be a compliment.
Nonetheless.
But still.
It does illustrate that she had a mathematical bent herself. And what I find interesting is that not only were Lord Byron's poetical genes evident later in Ada's life, but actually she ended up being sort of a blend of both of her parents, as is appropriate for this case.
Yeah, yeah. And Ada herself received a wonderful, wonderful title given to her by Charles Babbage, whom we'll discuss at length in a little bit, the Enchantress of Numbers.
Yeah,
which I think is an amazing, amazing phrase, and very fitting as well. So Ada grows up with some of the best tutors that you can imagine during this time.
Oh, yeah.
She studies mathematics and is absolutely fascinated with them,
yes,
with the subject of mathematics, and is incredibly adept, an amazing student. In fact, the more we researched Ada, the more I realized, anyway, that she was phenomenally more intelligent than I am. I mean, I can't even really compare. She was able to understand algorithms that completely baffle me, and was able to really study them in a way that she found fascinating. I find them perplexing and maddening. She
yes.
found it as having its own kind of poetry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in a way, you think about it, well, this kind of makes sense. You know, we when you really look at algorithms, we're talking about things like number theory,
right,
and how the universe sort of works, like how things kind of fit together. And we express this more often than not through mathematic equations and algorithms and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to see that kind of stuff. I can understand the underlying concept, but when you get beyond that, I feel like I'm a fish out of water.
Yeah, I understand. Well, let's see. Somebody else who was fascinated with her would be William King.
Yes, he was so fascinated with her, he married her.
Yeah, well, the first William King, who was her tutor, I found this interesting.
Oh,
you mean
the two different William Kings?
Well, no, I did mean her future husband, but okay. It was really funny because it confused me for a second when I was doing the research. I said, William King was her tutor? And then, as it turns out, there was a William King, not the one she married, as her tutor, who was apparently immediately feeling out of his depth as he talked to her. He realized that she had a much more innate grasp of mathematics than he did.
Right.
So he actually bowed out very quickly. He was one of the many. Less than a year later, apparently, Ada married the other William King, who was the eighth Baron King and was an earl, made an earl in 1938. So that's when she became...
You mean 1838?
1838. Did I say 1938?
Yeah.
Dude, sorry.
That's all right.
So, yes, he was made an earl in 1838, and that's when she became the Countess of Lovelace.
Yes, so we usually just refer to her as Ada Lovelace.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ada continued her almost obsession with mathematics throughout her life, which unfortunately was... tragically short.
Yes.
Ada passed away from after contracting cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I think she was 37. It was 1852 when she died,
yes.
Correct?
Mm-hmm. November 27th, 1852.
Right. But during that her life, she ended up encountering lots of remarkable people.
Absolutely.
Including, like the author Charles Dickens, who became a close friend. One of her other friends was Charles Babbage.
Yeah, she met Babbage, who was the Lucasian professor of mathematics at Cambridge.
Right.
She met him when she was just 17, which is pretty interesting. 1833 was it around when that happened. She rubbed elbows with other people who were interested in math and science, like Mary Somerville.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't know, should we get into the time when she was talking at a party with Babbage about this new machine?
Sure.
1834.
Sure.
He had come up with this thing.
The analytical engine?
Yes.
All right. Well, let's backtrack just a touch before we get into the analytical engine.
Right.
That was not the first machine that Babbage had proposed.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, we brought it up before.
Yeah, the computers difference from the past.
Right. That was a fun podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, this was a more recent one. And as we talked about on that podcast, Babbage was having difficulty getting funding for these amazing machines because people just didn't get it.
Babbage was able to get sub-funding for his first machine, which is called the Difference Engine. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which was different from the other one.
Right. It was a little more simplistic than his idea for the analytical engine. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, the Difference Engine, he managed to get some money to fund it, but the process of building it was a very long, laborious process.
Yeah.
They had to actually machine these parts by hand and try and put it all together. And he kind of ran out of money before he ran out of machine. Mm-hmm. The machine was not done yet. And it was in the process of this whole construction phase that he got the idea for the analytical machine, which was even more ambitious than the Difference engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the analytical engine was going to be more complex and be able to do more than the Difference engine, which you could kind of say was essentially a giant calculator.
Right.
The analytical engine was more like a very primitive computer.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, that whole time thing, the fact that it was taking a long time to build, did not help him when he was seeking funding for the analytical engine.
Right. There were two things that kind of plagued him when he was trying to get some money. One was that he had not finished the Difference engine, and that was kind of what he was being paid for in the first place.
Yes.
So his funders were saying, until you build this other machine you promised us several years ago, we ain't giving you no more money.
Yeah.
And then the other part of
they probably didn't say it like that, though.
No, they probably said it with an English accent, so it's probably... Till you go and fish that thing, we ain't giving you no more money. They're apparently
I'm so
all,
glad I made that joke now.
They're apparently all played by Dick Van Dyke. So anyway, at any rate, so Babbage is in a tight spot, but he comes up with this idea of the analytical engine, and of course, he's very passionate about it, so he's blabbering on and on about it at parties.
Yes.
And then you have young Ada Lovelace, who overhears such talk and thinks... This sounds absolutely fascinating.
Neato.
And not only does she think it's interesting, she immediately sees the potential to use such a device far beyond even Babbage's concepts.
Mm-hmm.
is Babbage is thinking, well, this would allow you to create an engine that would be able to generate the numbers that you would find in a logarithmic table.
Yes.
Because until that point, you pretty much had to be able to come up with those figures by doing the calculations all yourself. And these calculations were pretty complex, and it was easy to make a mistake along the way, which would, of course, affect all of your figures from that point on. And he was sitting down one day, and he was thinking, what if there were a machine, some steam-powered machine that could generate these numbers so I wouldn't have to?
Mm-hmm.
And then I could generate them as far out as I wanted to, and I wouldn't have to worry about error because the machine would just be following the same algorithm over and over and over again.
Yes.
Well, Ada thought of that, and she even went further. She said that you could potentially use mathematics to represent other things like text,
mm-hmm,
or images,
yep,
or even music.
Yep.
She had foreseen computers.
Yes.
This remarkable woman was able to look at this machine that really was meant to be able to run algorithms so that you could generate more mathematical figures, mainly in the pursuit of mathematics itself and things like number theory.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to see even grander uses, which to me is it's one of those discoveries that I just think before that time, no one had ever really even considered this. And then she just comes up with it just by looking at this thing and seeing its potential.
Yes.
That's where I'm like, okay, this woman was way above and beyond smarter than I am.
All right, stop geeking out for a second.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I will give you a quote from her, as a matter of fact. She compared it to Jacquard's loom. If you will remember, we've mentioned that machine a couple times on the podcast, I believe. This was a loom that was invented by Monsieur Jacquard, and basically made a lot of people unhappy because it used punch cards to automate parts of the weaving process. You could put in a card for a pattern, and the loom would be able to weave that pattern into the fabric. Well, she said, we may say most aptly that the analytical engine weaves algebraical patterns just as a Jacquard loom weaves flowers and leaves.
Hmm.
So, see, there you go. There's that whole poetry thing. She's, you know, it's just in there.
Yeah. Well, and like I said, even if you ignore the language, and Ada was very gifted with words, just
yes,
as she was with mathematics. The fact that she could see the poetry in math is, again, very phenomenal to me.
Well, I meant that she was making connections between something that was completely, well, not completely, but in a wide way, it was not very related directly to this analytical engine. Also, you might notice, she sort of foresaw the use of punch cards to mm-hmm, be used for programs. So she's already thinking in a programmatic sense.
Yeah, actually, Babbage himself talked a little bit about punch cards when he wrote about his analytical engine. Yeah. And in his sense, he was talking about the use for punch cards for two purposes. And we've talked about this. Babbage also. We shouldn't
no, he's
leave him out of this amazing innovation as well. Babbage was also amazing in his ability to foresee the future as far as computers are concerned. Now, granted, his devices were all mechanical as opposed to electrical.
Yes.
But they... The principles of electronic computing are based very firmly on Babbage's discoveries. Babbage foresaw the use of punch cards using two different kinds of punch cards. One would be a set of instructions,
mm-hmm,
and the other would represent the constants or variables of whatever formula you're plugging in.
So, right. So one is the program, and the other is the information that you plug into the program to get a result.
Exactly. Same sort of thing that we see in microprocessors today.
Mm,
what Babbage was doing was the precursor to the microprocessor.
Mm-hmm.
It's just his was a macro processor because it was enormous and weighed tons and tons if he had ever managed to actually build it.
Look at the size of that silicon wafer.
Yeah, he never did build the analytical engine. He did.
No.
He realized during his lifetime that it was not going to happen, and I'm sure it was a massive disappointment to him.
But they have been made since.
Yes, there was one created almost like an art project in the early 90s. And
fun.
I think it's in a museum now, right?
Yeah, actually, I think there may be two.
Oh, two.
To be honest, I think. It's one of those things that I ran across a mention of as I was looking specifically for information about Ada Lovelace, so I didn't follow it. But yeah, I think I saw that there were two in existence now that had been created just because you can.
And Babbage actually wrote that the analytical engine would eventually contain an apparatus for printing on paper, or, if required, up to two copies printed out on paper.
Hey, that puts it ahead of the iPad.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm kidding. There's software for that.
It has it would have a means for producing a stereotype mold of the tables or results it computes. And it would have a mechanism for punching on blank pasteboard cards or metal plates the numerical results of any of its computations. So, in other words, you would read it by looking at a punch card. You would find the results of whatever it was that you were trying to calculate.
Mm-hmm.
And his method of designating a punch card was actually pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
Each punch card had had several columns of holes or columns where you could punch a hole and 10 rows.
Mm-hmm.
And if you punched the top hole, that would be a 1. If you punched the top 2, that would be a 2. If you punched the top 3, that would be a 3. So this isn't binary. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So, but it was a very simple way. You would look at the punch card and you would say, all right, well, the first number is a 3 because the first 3 holes are punched, that kind of thing. It made it pretty easy to read.
Yes.
But again, Babbage was just thinking in terms of numbers. Lovelace was the one who was thinking in terms of graphics, music, that kind of thing.
That's true. That's true.
And then Lovelace comes up with a kind of a test. She writes out a program, essentially, based on Babbage's design for the analytical engine. Now, this engine, again, did not physically exist at this point.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it never existed during his life.
Yeah.
And Lovelace predeceased Babbage. So Lovelace looks at this design, and she says, you know what? Let's just take one mathematical algorithm, and I will design a program for this engine that would fulfill this algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
So she decides to create a program that would generate Bernoulli numbers.
Yes.
I would like to explain to you what a Bernoulli number is. Honestly, I would like to,
mm-hmm.
but I'm an English major. And no, seriously, I looked at Bernoulli numbers. I looked up 5 or 6 different explanations, and really, it's a level of mathematics with which I am not comfortable, so I cannot even explain. They're generated through a simple algorithm, relatively simple algorithm, and Lovelace was able to create a program that would have generated Bernoulli numbers through the analytic engine had it ever been built.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, yes, you can call her the first computer programmer.
Definitely so. I admit it's been a long time since I took calculus to more than 20 years now. But the Bernoulli numbers were named for Jacob Bernoulli, who published – actually, the work was published after his death. It was published in 1713. And based on the – and that was in the I probably am not pronouncing this right – Ars Conjectandi or – yeah. Anyway. It was published by Mr. Bernoulli, who was one of several in his family to work with math. But the Bernoulli numbers are very, very important because they can be used in a lot of different ways related to number theory.
And trigonometric functions as well. But yes, number theory, I mean, we're talking about a lot of pure mathematics here.
Yeah. It basically has to deal with the consecutive integers and the way the sums of powers are calculated.
Yeah. I read that and, sure.
Yeah.
Also, I should also point out before anyone writes in, He was not the first. He was not the only person to discover this principle.
Well, I mean, this is a time of people who are discovering things at the same time.
Right. At the same time, there was
two different forms of the calculus.
I want to say it was a Japanese scholar who discovered it, and also his work was published after he passed away, and it was published in 1712.
Wow.
1 year before.
So,
but they probably discovered it around the same time.
Yeah, because this was actually almost 10 years, I think, after Bernoulli's death. So, yeah,
right.
It would have been concurrently redundant. Well, it's hard to say who was first, but they were around the same time, just as, you know, in the immediately preceding years, we have the calculus being conceived of. It's fast. It must have been a really heady time for mathematicians.
Oh, sure. And so, yeah, I mean, the fact that Lovelace was able to, you know, she knew, of course, about this, the algorithm to generate Bernoulli numbers, and was able to program this is all more or less a thought experiment, because, again, nothing existed upon which she could run this program. But she was able to create a program that would have generated Bernoulli numbers based upon the way that the analytical engine would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, one, she understood this, which all by itself is pretty amazing to me, because, I mean, in the sense that I find it completely incomprehensible. Two, she was able to write a program for something that only existed in theory. I mean, and she had a lot of influence with Babbage. The two of them together really kind of shaped the analytical engine, and they would find errors in each other's work.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like Babbage would make mistakes because he's human, and Lovelace would find them, and sometimes Lovelace would make mistakes and Babbage would find them. They had a very long history of correspondence, and also a webcomic.
Yes.
Yeah, we have to mention that, the Lovelace and Babbage webcomic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this, guys, do a search on the web for the Lovelace and Babbage webcomic, because it is phenomenal. I think it's a very playful, tongue-in-cheek tribute to these two individuals, but I think it's also, you can tell it's made out of love.
Yeah.
I mean, that kind of effort to go into, and it's great art, it's great writing. It kind of picks up on the presumption of Lovelace and Babbage becoming kind of like crime fighters, using computational in the analytical engine to defeat crime and solve mysteries. And
what, well, does sort of sound like the like it should be a Hanna-Barbera show or something.
Kind of, but the art's better. So
true.
Yeah, no, it's really great stuff. I definitely recommend it. And you know why we got these emails so close together, right?
Why is that?
It's because of Ada Lovelace Day.
Ah, yes.
Now, the very first Ada Lovelace Day was held on the March 24th of 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And they had another one this year, again, March 24th. And you can find information about Ada Lovelace Day on Facebook, on the web in general. There's a Twitter feed for called Finding Ada, and Ada is ADA, so it's all one word, Finding Ada. And they try and get people to sign a pledge to blog about Ada Lovelace and kind of increase public awareness of who this woman was and what she accomplished and how really amazing, you know, she was. And there, if you look at contemporary records of Lovelace, it's a little, for me, it's a little discomforting, because it's almost dismissive. It's like she's amazing despite the fact that she's a woman.
Right.
I mean, which is, of course, indicative of the general philosophy of the era, right? Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it's, you know, I ignore that, because this woman was just phenomenal, period.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I should point out, too, that that's not the only time she's been honored, you know, and recognized for her work. As a matter of fact, oddly enough, the United States Department of Defense honored her with her own programming language,
yeah,
called Ada, in 1979. So I think she's fascinating enough that she just sort of keeps popping up in history from time to time. People get fascinated and want to learn more about her, and
right,
for every reason, she's an absolutely brilliant lady.
Anyone who has a computer science background,
yes,
has heard of her.
Oh, yeah.
Just from their studies. But I can't help but feel that had she not had cancer, had she been able to live on and continue her work, that possibly the era of computers would have come a little faster. Now,
it's possible.
It's the main thing that would have had to have happened was that the combination of Lovelace and Babbage's work would have to convince people to invest in completing the analytical engine. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, they didn't have the resources at their disposal to create an electrical computer.
Right.
It would still have been a mechanical instrument. And who knows how sophisticated it ultimately would have been. It may be that her vision of mathematics representing music and graphics and that sort of thing would take longer and possibly a totally different form factor than the analytical engine. But
we might compute completely differently than we do now.
Yeah, who knows? It could have been a very steampunk kind of future.
Yeah.
Right? Well, I hope we did justice to Ada Lovelace. Again.
And if you want to know more about her as a person, definitely check out the Stuff You Missed in History Class podcast.
Yes, they do. They do an excellent compliment. Job. Yeah, I listened to it before we did this podcast, and Katie and Sarah really do a great job at giving an idea of what her life was like, and mm-hmm. especially her relationship with her mother, which was a very complex relationship, and sometimes combative. But it's an interesting story, kind mm-hmm. of tragic ultimately, but definitely helped shape the way the history of computers.
Yes.
And since that wraps up that discussion, I thought we'd go on to a little listener mail. This listener mail comes from Johnny, and Johnny says, "Hey guys, I heard that Stuff You Should Know is making t-shirts. How about we have a t-shirt contest? Also, you said in your Microchip podcast that you guys were related to the Science Channel. What's going on here? Is there any other things that How Stuff Works is related to? Thanks." Well, Johnny, as for the t-shirt thing, I wouldn't hold my breath right now. Stuff You Should Know is by far our most popular podcast, and of course has the biggest audience, which is fantastic. It's a great show. And so we've kind of trying to see how that goes before we do any other kind of t-shirt stuff. We'll definitely keep it in mind, but I'm not gonna. I don't see it happening in the near future. However, you did ask what our relationship was to the Science Channel.
Yes.
You want to take that one, Chris?
Well, of course, we are a part of Discovery Communications.
Right.
And there are lots and lots of really awesome TV channels and websites related to that, like the Discovery Channel, Science mm-hmm. Channel, TLC, Planet Green, Animal Planet.
Right.
And all those guys.
Yeah, so
other websites like treehugger.com, which is
right.
awesome.
Yeah, so we're part of a really big family, and that's what Paulette meant when he said that the Science Channel was kind of related to us. We're all kind of under the umbrella of Discovery Communications.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that answers your question. If any of you have any other questions, send them in to us. Our email address is techstuff@howstuffworks.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the new Tech Stuff blog, now on the How Stuff Works homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.